It's Friday, March 12th, and 50 days from now, every adult will be eligible. We start here. In a primetime address, President Biden lays out a new timeline for vaccines and for hope.
But it means you'll be able to get in line beginning May 1.
From May Day to Independence Day, what your next few months are about to look like. We knew the vaccines were good, but not this good.
I don't think any of us expected it would reduce transmission by 90-95%.
Could new data from Pfizer render masks obsolete? And he called for a president's impeachment. Well, now the governor of New York could be impeached himself.
This is a real internal struggle, I think, for some Democrats.
Why a new accusation might have just pushed Andrew Cuomo past the point of no return. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. As you look around the country, there is this growing sense of optimism, but also impatience.
From yesterday.
Are you 65 or older?
No, I'm 51.
Okay, are you a school teacher?
Yes.
Whether it's teachers or folks with disabilities or someone who's 64, not 65, depending on where you live, there's been this sense of who decided I wasn't worth prioritizing for a COVID-19 vaccination? Like, when is it my turn already? We actually discussed yesterday how that sense of impatience is only going to grow. There's supposed to be enough vaccine doses for every adult by the end of May, but until then, who gets it and when?
Texans between 50 and 64 years old.
New Yorkers over 60 and postal workers soon eligible for the COVID vaccine.
In some states, it's been super regimented, but in other states, eligibility has often outpaced supply. Seniors are still struggling for appointments when, oh, here come the teachers.
She kept trying. She just gave up. She's out trying tomorrow. Well, now I see all the time slots are filled.
But you can see the logic in some of these states as well. You want to get everyone vaccinated eventually. It takes a lot of work to weed people out. Opening it up can increase disparities between have and have nots, but at some point, are you actually just wasting energy by trying to keep people away from the syringes?
Good evening, my fellow Americans.
Well, last night, President Biden was set to make his first primetime address to Americans, marking the one-year anniversary since the coronavirus pandemic was declared. We thought, oh, you know, he's going to rally the country, he'll tell us help is on the way. Instead, he came out with a new significant announcement that the whole concept of vaccine eligibility was going away sooner than you think. ABC senior White House correspondent Mary Bruce is at the West Wing right now. Mary, what is this new timeline coming from the White House?
This was a major announcement from the president. He is now directing states to ensure that all adults are eligible for the vaccine by May 1st.
Let me say that again. All adult Americans will be eligible to get a vaccine no later than May 1.
Now, he does add, of course, that doesn't mean that all Americans are going to be getting the vaccine then. He still doesn't believe that we will have enough doses for all Americans to be vaccinated until the end of May.
But it means you'll be able to get in line beginning May 1. Every adult will be eligible to get their shot.
And as anyone knows, if you've been trying to get a vaccine, I know I have been, everybody I know has been trying to get one. It's a really hard process, too. So they're also taking these steps to try and just ease the process of trying to get a vaccine.
Including a new website that will help you first find the place to get vaccinated and the one nearest you. No more searching day and night for an appointment for you and your loved ones.
Hey, what changed, Mayor? Like, do we have more vaccine doses, or is the White House just, like, tired of arguing over who should come next?
This is the president trying to speed things up to a certain extent. He's using his power to direct states to do this, to say that they've got to speed things up.
We're going to go from 1 million shots a day that I promised in December, before I was sworn in, to maintaining, beating our current pace of 2 million shots a day.
What it really is a sign of confidence that they're going to be able to reach these new goals, especially that they're going to be able to get some of these more at-risk populations vaccinated in a real timely manner. So it means that there will be then an ability to get the rest of us, to get everybody else who thought before that they may be at the back of the line, they may have to wait a bit longer. That's not necessarily going to be the case.
If we do our part, if we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day.
The president is setting some very ambitious landmarks here. You heard him say that he now has a goal of allowing small celebrations on the 4th of July. He's really planting a flag, right, in this effort to return to some sense of normalcy.
That's some good branding, Mary. Independence Day. Like, whoever thought of that? That's a smart day. That was
pretty
smart.
Clever. That's a good political slogan right there, declaring not only that it will be an Independence Day, but also hopefully a day of independence from this pandemic.
But to get there, we can't let our guard down.
Now, of course, he did have a lot of caveats to this, right? There are variants that pose a significant threat. There are always, you know, unforeseen things that can happen.
Because if we don't stay vigilant and the conditions change, then we may have to reinstate restrictions to get back on track. And please, we don't want to do that again.
But the president telling Americans, hey, if everyone masks up, if you follow the guidelines, if you take these seriously, if you go and get that vaccine, hey, you could enjoy some fireworks with your buddies on July 4th.
Hey, Mary, can I just say, I was surprised that really one of the first things Biden did in this speech last night was blame the Trump administration. He was talking about denying the seriousness of this pandemic early on. Later, he said that we just hadn't done nearly enough for the vaccination efforts a few months ago. And yet, when we see how efficient some of these federal vaccination efforts have been, how many doses have been secured compared to other countries, I mean, some experts have said you have, gasp, the Trump administration to thank for that. I mean, how is Biden positioning himself here?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this. Trying to unsort all of this is tricky. The tone that Biden set last night was a really interesting one because he's trying to come out and project hope. He's trying to console a nation.
For we are fundamentally a people who want to be with others, to talk, to laugh, to hug, to hold one another. But this virus has kept us apart.
But this also was a turning point speech.
Millions and millions of grandparents who went months without being able to hug their grandkids can now do so.
The president trying to say, look, the previous administration, he has made very clear, he believes failed. And even though, you know, many Republicans and some from the previous administration have said, hey, we helped to get the ball rolling here, we deserve some credit, this White House staunchly disagrees.
When I came into office, you may recall, I set a goal that many of you said was that kind of way over the top. I said I intended to get 100 million shots in people's arms in my first 100 days in office. Tonight, I can say we're not only going to meet that goal, we're going to beat that goal. Because we're actually on track to reach this goal of 100 million shots in arms on my 60th day in office.
It was a very fine line to have to walk for the president. We know that he pored over this speech, trying to make sure that he struck the right tone here, that balance between being presidential and also obviously political.
We faced and overcame one of the toughest and darkest periods in this nation's history. Darkest we've ever known. I promise you, we'll come out stronger.
It was a very tall order for the president.
Yeah, that's right. We had told you President Biden might be signing that huge relief bill today. Well, clearly yesterday, everyone at the White House realized it's kind of weird to say we're doing everything we can, but we still haven't signed that big rescue bill. So it's just chilling out of my desk. So he did sign that. Stimulus checks being cut right now. Americans could start getting direct deposits as soon as the weekend. Mary Bruce at the White House. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
So at this moment, close to 10% of this country is fully vaccinated. But remember, it's been kind of unclear how comfortable you should feel changing your daily habits after you get vaccinated. And basically, the whole reason for this confusion is we still don't know whether vaccinated people can still spread this disease.
The looming question is, if a person gets infected, despite the fact that they've been vaccinated, we refer to that as a breakthrough infection. Does that person have the capability of transmitting the infection to another person?
Scientists are not worried that vaccinated people are suddenly going to start getting sick with COVID. That's not what this is about. They're super confident there. But we just don't know whether you could still get the virus and then transmit the virus to other people. Well, yesterday, one of the vaccine makers, Pfizer, came out and said, we've got new data on our vaccine, and it's more than 90% effective at preventing transmission.
In Israel, and I honestly had to check this stat multiple times to make sure I understood it, 94% effectiveness in preventing asymptomatic infection.
On the surface, that is a game-changing claim. That is not just saying, we'll keep you out of the hospital, don't worry about yourself. That's saying, once you're vaccinated, You're done with this form of COVID, period, full stop. So let's bring in Dr. Ashish Jha. He leads the School of Public Health at Brown University. He's an ABC News contributor. And Dr. Jha, I mean, we're seeing numbers from Pfizer here saying this vaccine is like 94, 97% effective at stopping transmission. If that number is confirmed, and we're still waiting for the confirmation there, but if it was, how significant would that be?
First of all, thanks for having me on. And the second is this is huge. It makes a huge difference. Look, we've always suspected that these vaccines would reduce transmission. I don't think any of us expected it would reduce transmission by 90, 95%. Basically, what it means is once you're fully vaccinated, you're safe, but the people around you are safe and that you can't transmit the virus. I mean, again, it's 95, so it's not 100, but your ability to transmit the virus to somebody else is very, very, very low.
The data are demonstrating 94% efficacy on asymptomatic. This is, means that 94% protection against you getting infected, even if you don't have the disease.
And what happens, I mean, Israel's still cooking along. They haven't vaccinated most of their population. But in communities in Israel where vaccinations are very high levels, you're seeing very, very low rates of infection in that community. And so it's this is really big news.
Right. And again, and I don't want listeners to get ahead of themselves. Like this is data from the company. Like the CDC is going to go over all this. But if you're the CDC at this point, doctor, like if there's data confirming that you're not going to get the virus if you're vaccinated with this, you're also not going to give it to anyone else. Like, can they really keep telling people, no, you can't travel. No, you can't even gather with other vaccinated people in larger groups. Like, can you really tell people not to go to a vaccinated concert in a few months? What does this mean for the CDC?
Yeah, so first of all, it's one vaccine, one data point,
right.
But I think it's going to get verified. My sense is we're going to see similar things for Moderna, similar things for J&J. And I do think what I'm expecting is CDC is going to pull back some of their recommendations on restrictions. I think you're going to see CDC say that large numbers of vaccinated people can get together, that you can travel safely.
In the privacy of your own home, you can meet with other vaccinated people, you can hug them, you can dine without wearing your mask in your own home. You can also meet with people who are unvaccinated but have low risk of severe disease.
Again, the problem right now is there are a lot of unvaccinated people who are high risk. Once that group is dealt with, which I think in April, high-risk people will be able to get vaccinated. Boy, I think May, June really starts looking really good.
Right, which I guess brings us back to what we were just talking to with Mary about President Biden's announcement here. I mean, is this announcement, everyone is eligible starting May 1st, does that, in your mind, is that encouraging? Or from a public health perspective, is that like a recipe for chaos?
Well, I mean, I think what will happen is that high-risk people will have gotten vaccinated by April.
We just have to make that extra effort to make sure that we bring communities, to bring the vaccines to the communities that need them and not just assume that just because we're sending them out, that they're going to get to people that need them.
Everybody should be eligible by the beginning of May. Doesn't mean you're going to get your first shot on May 1st. Might take a little while to get the appointment. But by that time, everybody who is high risk will have gotten their first shot, and everybody else who wants one can start scheduling their appointments.
If you can get the vaccine, the best thing to do is get that vaccine when it's your turn. Be ready.
And you'll get your first shot in May if you want one. Your second shot in June, maybe at the latest. It means a really good July 4th is what it means.
Just what a huge 24 hours in terms of how many vaccines we have and what they could potentially do for you. Because if these numbers hold, that would make at least the Pfizer vaccine among the most effective vaccines in history, period. Dr. Jha, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next up on Start Here, an impeachment investigation is bad, but Andrew Cuomo could be facing a police investigation as well. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P mintmobile.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
At the end of the day, science trumps politics.
Political power is a funny thing. It's really hard to accrue, but it can also go away really quickly. For years now, Governor Andrew Cuomo has arguably been the most powerful politician in New York. So when he admitted his office had not been sharing enough data about COVID-19 deaths last year in nursing homes, it was notable that New York Democrats were publicly frustrated with him.
We created the void by not producing enough public information quickly enough. I get that.
When a former aide came forward a week later and described an environment in which Cuomo allegedly made sexual advances towards staffers, Democrats expressed concern. Some called on him to resign. But generally, the sentiment among state lawmakers seemed to be, let's wait for more facts. There's still disagreement over whether Al Franken should have had to resign after women accused him of inappropriate conduct. And the last person we want on our bad side is Governor Cuomo.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, increasingly under fire tonight.
Well, then another woman came forward.
Another bombshell accusation against Governor Cuomo tonight.
And another.
This weekend, a new wave of allegations.
And another.
I was elected by the people of the state. I wasn't elected by politicians. I'm not going to resign because of allegations.
This week, a sixth woman made perhaps the most disturbing allegation so far. And last night, something seemed to break. The New York State Assembly could now be laying the groundwork to impeach Andrew Cuomo. ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky joins us now. Aaron, what has changed in the last 24 hours?
I think it's that latest accusation, Brad, and it is, I think it's fair to say, the most damaging and potentially consequential yet. And this is according to the Albany Times Union, because the woman in question, a staff member in the state government, has not publicly come forward with her accusation, but she told the governor's office about it. And the Albany Times Union reported that the aide alleges Cuomo groped her inside the governor's mansion late last year after summoning her ostensibly to help him with some telephone issue he was having. And the paper reports that she made her claim after Cuomo declared,
"I never touched anyone inappropriately."
The woman, who was not identified, then told a co-worker that Cuomo had summoned her to the mansion, and while they were alone, he had reached under her shirt.
Cuomo calls the allegation gut-wrenching, but insists he's never done anything like this.
But this is now a matter that has been referred to the Albany Police Department, the governor's special counsel, his lawyer, effectively, by protocol. Said that she reported the accusation to police because the woman herself did not want to file a police report. So while the police have not yet opened a criminal investigation, this is the kind of accusation, Brad, that could lead to a potential misdemeanor sexual assault charge.
Yeah, the referral to the police seems like a big difference maker here, too. What is the difference, Aaron, between they're saying there's going to be an impeachment investigation, right? Is that not just an impeachment? Like, is he being impeached?
He is not being impeached, at least not yet. And truthfully, Brad, the state assembly, which would call for the impeachment proceedings, there aren't the votes yet.
In a statement, more than 55 state Democratic lawmakers now demanding Cuomo step down, saying he has lost the confidence of the public and the state legislature, rendering him ineffective in this time of most urgent need.
This seems more like a stall tactic, even though it's one that could potentially, as you said at the outset, lay the groundwork for an impeachment, because we know that Andrew Cuomo has been steadfast in his refusal to resign.
Get the facts, please, before forming an opinion.
Even though more and more of his fellow Democrats in the state government and even some beyond call for his resignation.
Someone who he had power over called them to a private place and then sexually assaulted her is absolutely unacceptable. It is disgusting to me. And he can no longer serve as governor.
Outside Hastie's office in the Bronx today, protesters, for a second day in a row, demanded that state leaders take action.
Because we need the Senate and the Assembly to assume leadership, because Governor Cuomo's not going to do it.
And so with a growing sentiment facing the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, he has authorized the State Assembly Judicial Committee to begin an impeachment investigation. Now, there's already an investigation of the governor's conduct. It's being led by the state attorney general's office, and she brought in two outside lawyers, one a former federal prosecutor and the other a noted employment attorney, to investigate not only these allegations, but they've also started a website where the public can submit tips and claims. And so it's clear that the investigation could potentially expand beyond the known allegations.
But so I guess I'm wondering, how much pressure do Democrats feel to do something, Aaron? Because, like, on one hand, this is the party that has claimed to be much faster to say, believe women, right? But on the other hand, we've generally been hearing, like, these have been allegations of harassment, not outright, like, this was the first sort of groping, a potential assault allegation. But then there's the question, of course, of like, oh, so harassment's fine? No, of course it's not. So what are Democrats willing to consider? How quickly are they willing to move?
This is a real internal struggle, I think, for some Democrats. You mentioned Al Franken, Brad.
Senator Franken is entitled to the Senate ethics investigation process, but I don't think Congress is equipped. I don't think they have the tools to do the kind of accountability that the American people are searching for.
It was New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand that immediately called for his ouster.
Oh, right. Like, and she led the charge in a lot of ways.
And she has been much quieter on the Cuomo allegation.
She's called for an investigation, but she has not called for Cuomo to step down.
Do you think he should resign in light of the third allegation?
And as you mentioned, some Democrats felt like maybe they acted too fast and that they were unilaterally disarming. They were holding themselves to a standard that Republicans were not holding themselves to. And so many Democrats said maybe we ought to slow down here.
The allegations of these women are very, very troubling. The one last night was particularly nauseating. They all must be looked into.
Other Democrats say we are holding ourselves to a different standard, and this kind of conduct is not acceptable. Governor Cuomo himself has been asked about his prior calls to believe women and to call for resignations of men who behaved inappropriately, specifically the former attorney general in New York, Eric Schneiderman. And Cuomo said, look, there are allegations and there are allegations. And I think he's reflecting what some Democrats are feeling, which is maybe he did some stuff, but not enough to demand his immediate resignation. Right. So there's real soul searching, I think, within the Democratic Party because of this.
Right. The question of what merits an investigation, what merits an impeachment, what merits just immediate expulsion. These are the questions that a lot of these lawmakers are running into. A lot of Americans are running into. Aaron Katursky, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. It wasn't just the royal family that was shook by this week's interview from Harry and Meghan. It turns out, basically anything that was even remotely related to this frenzy was suddenly in high demand.
Thank God I had known the value of working. My first job was when I was 13 at a frozen yogurt shop called Humphrey Yogurt.
Within a day of Meghan Markle name-checking her former employer, the Humphrey Yogurt store in Sherman Oaks, even on rainy days, was seeing a dramatic rise in business. And this wasn't even the one where Meghan worked. That location is closed. The dress she wore in the interview by Giorgio Armani sells for $4,700. Well, sales have already skyrocketed. Oprah Winfrey's glasses, they're suddenly in high demand.
What? What?
Which makes you wonder, why do people want this stuff so badly? Is it about the power of free advertising? Like, people had never seen this dress before, now they have, so they want it? Or is it more about connecting to the moment itself?
There are even stories that you knew all along that this was going to happen, you went through the whole process, and it was all intentional to build your brand.
Can you imagine how little sense that makes?
One thing's for sure, this is not about just feeling close to the former royals. We know that because the patio chairs they all sat in have sold out. Not those exact chairs, mind you, just that brand of furniture. You can't get it anywhere now. Remember, this interview was not conducted at Meghan's house. It was not at Oprah's house. This was just some patio in Southern California. And even when that furniture sold out, customers started turning to Walmart, which sells a set that kind of looks like this furniture. And guess what? That's all sold out too. Good patio chair. Like, I guess it's like the California version of a throne. You want a good one. Hey, if you get a chance, rate and review Start Here. It really does help us out. If you've already done that, bless you. Tell a friend about us. Tweet about us. Spread the love. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Lewis Millman, Tara Gimbel, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia DeShishku. Special thanks this week to Stephanie Ebbs, Josh Hoyos, Chris Berry, Kinez Walker, Laura Coburn, Ali Yang, and Haley Yamada. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.